A Happy Landing. On 13 April, 12 April back in the States, we learned of the death of President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Not the least bit interested in politics while we were fighting for our lives, we were saddened nonetheless by the loss of our president. We were also curious and a bit apprehensive about how FDR's successor, Harry S. Truman, would handle the war. We surely didn't want someone in the White House who would prolong it one day longer than necessary. Not long after hearing of Roosevelt's death, we were told to prepare to move out. Apprehension grew in the ranks. We thought the order meant the inevitable move into the inferno down south. On the contrary, it was to be a shore-to-shore amphibious operation against one of the eastern islands. We learned that Company K was to land on Takabanari Island, and that there might not be any Japanese there. We were highly skeptical, but so far, Okinawa had been a strange battle for us. Anything could happen. Our battalion boarded trucks and headed for the East Coast. We went to board Amtrak's and set out into Chimuwan to make the short voyage to Takabanari. The other companies of our battalion went after other islands of the group. We landed, with no opposition, on a narrow, clean, sandy beach with a large rock mass high on our left. The rock hill looked foreboding. It was a vantage point from which flanking fire could have raked the beach. But all went well, and we pushed rapidly over the entire island without seeing a single enemy soldier. After we moved across the island and found nothing but a few civilians, we recrossed the island to the beach, where we set up defensive positions. My squad was situated partway up the slope of the steep, rocky hill overlooking the beach. Our mortar was well emplaced among some rocks, so that we could fire on the beach or its approaches in the bay. A small destroyer escort was anchored offshore at the base of the hill. It had been standing by during our landing and remained with us during the several days we stayed on Takabanari. We felt important, as though we had our own private navy. The weather was pleasant, so sleeping in the open was comfortable. We had few duties other than standing by to prevent a possible enemy move to occupy the island. I wrote letters, read, and explored the area around our positions. Some of the Marines swam the short distance to the ship and went aboard, where the Navy people welcomed them and treated them to hot chow and all the hot coffee they wanted. I was content to laze in the sun and the cool air and eat K-rations. We left Takabanari after several days and returned to our bivouac on Okinawa. There we resumed patrolling in the central area of the island. As April wore on, rumors and bad news increased about the situation the Army was facing down south. Scuttlebutt ran rampant about our future employment down there. Our fear increased daily, and we finally got the word that we'd be moving south on 1 May to replace the 27th Infantry Division on the right flank of the 10th Army. About mid-April, the 11th Marines, the 1st Marine Division's artillery regiment, had moved south to add the weight of its firepower to the Army's offensive. On 19 April, the 27th Infantry Division launched a disastrous tank infantry attack against Kakazu Ridge. 30 Army tanks became separated from their infantry support. The Japanese knocked out 22 of them in the ensuing fight. The 1st Marine Division's tank battalion offered the closest replacements for the tanks lost by the Army. Lieutenant General Simon B. Buckner, 10th Army Commander, ordered Major General Roy S. Geiger, 3rd Amphibious Corps Commander, to send the 1st Tank Battalion south to join the 27th Infantry Division. Geiger objected to the piecemeal employment of his Marines, so Buckner changed his orders and sent the entire 1st Marine Division south to relieve the 27th Infantry Division on the extreme right of the line, just north of Makinato Airfield.